since the NHL has been on pause, on hiatus, how have you been filling the days?
Well, it's been interesting, as I'm sure all your lives have been as well. Like, it's something that, you know, none of us probably have ever experienced. And you know, I think the first, when it first paused, I would say my perception of the enormity of this wasn't where it is today. Like, you know, I don't know if I thought we were going to get back playing in the next few weeks like what was probably hoped for. I'm not sure exactly what I thought, but I didn't know what to expect at all. I had no idea, and you just kind of played a waiting game. And now as this thing day by day has gotten, in my eyes, much more serious, not just from a health standpoint, but from a an economic standpoint and all that, boy, you know, it's been different. I've got three kids here at home that you know, who are no longer going to school and actually started their distance learning today. They're 14, 12, and 9. So tried to do some things with them, tried to enjoy more family time than, you know, we in the hockey world ever get. And also do a little bit of work at home, do a little bit of that, and tie in some hockey. And so I've kind of been doing a little bit of everything to try to stay busy, but it is a weird, weird feeling.
Berkey?
So, Blash, I was saying before you came on the air, fans that don't know a lot about your background, and I'll share one little secret. I met Jeff when he was at Miami University when my late son Brendan was there. So I go back quite some time with Jeff. But your career, we'll get to the coaching career in a second, but you grew up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. You were a goaltender. You didn't go to Lake State where your dad taught. How come you ended up at Ferris?
Well, one, because I wasn't good enough. At that time, the Lakers were rolling. And I grew up on campus, Berkey. I grew up right on campus. My dad taught there 35 years, following a career as a Detroit police officer. And you know, I played my junior hockey in Des Moines, Iowa, and it took me all 3 years to finally get a scholarship. And at the time, Lake State had a choice. They actually did have an opening, and they chose Johnny Graham over me. And I think it was just another testament to how good a coach Jeff Jackson is that he made that decision. So Bob Daniels got stuck with me at Ferris. And you know what, though? I met my wife at Ferris. I've got unbelievable friends from Ferris. And honestly, being a bad college goalie, it gave me a head start on coaching.
All right, so 4 years at Ferris State. And you come out of the program and they hire you as an assistant coach right out of school, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, my first year I was a volunteer assistant, did some work kind of teaching teaching assistant on a business law class. And then I was set to go be an assistant coach in the USHL in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And one of the full-time assistants at Ferris, Jamie Russell, left to go to Cornell, and Bob Daniels offered me the job full-time. And Berkey, I can tell you, you know, I've been excited at different times in my career for getting jobs. I remember being on a walk with my wife. We were living in Grand Rapids, and I was commuting up to Big Rapids. And I remember this to this day, how excited I was when I got that call that I got to stay at Ferris as the full-time assistant. It was an awesome feeling. So, you know, I spent 8 years in totality at Ferris, and it was a good run.
And what did you get paid as a full-time assistant coach your first year?
$17,500.
All right, we've been doing this. We asked John Tortorella when he was on a couple days ago. His first coaching job was in the Atlantic Coast Hockey League for $6,000 a year. And we're asking the coaches, because a lot of people don't know how you become a coach. How do you become a coach if you weren't an NHL player? So you're at Ferris, full-time assistant, and then where? You went to Miami from there?
Yeah, and it's funny, like, you know, my first year coaching would have been that year as a volunteer, and really my wife now, my girlfriend at the time, kind of supported me a little bit. I mean, I got paid, you know, whatever, the $5,000 it was to be a teaching assistant. I had a really good grade point average coming out of Ferris and a finance degree, and my dad's asking me, what in God's name are you doing? You know, but then I got the job at Ferris, and after those 4 years there, I had the opportunity. Enrico Blasi gave me an opportunity to go to Miami University, and it was a great, great time to be there. It was the time where we were trying to take the program that had been kind of a perennial good program and trying to take it to become a great program. And the lessons I learned during that time. It was Rico, Chris Bergeron, who's now the head coach there, and myself, and we were just three young guys, and we had a lot of arguments, a lot of great times, a lot of tough times, and we learned a ton as we went through that process.
Being joined by Jeff Laschel, the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, just going through your career, how you got there, playing as a goaltender growing up, USHL, and playing college hockey with the Ferris State. One of my curiosities about the game, Jeff, maybe you can open my eyes more about this, is there are so few goaltenders who find themselves behind the bench in a coaching capacity that isn't goaltending, that isn't the goalie coach. Emil Francis comes to mind right away, and Patrick Waugh and Glenn Hanlon, and Jacques Martin was, of course, a goaltender as well. Why do so few from the goaltending fraternity end up behind benches?
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's interesting that that's the case in pro, because when I was in college hockey, that wasn't necessarily the case. Goalies got into coaching. Actually, being a goalie kind of gave you an edge in some of the assistant coaching jobs, because you had that background and you could kind of kill two birds with one stone, have a coach who could also work with the goalies and could also recruit players and goalies. And it kind of gave you an in a little bit for some jobs. And those assistant jobs led to head coaching jobs. So I would say there's more former goalies in college hockey than there are in pro hockey. Why? I'm not sure. I know that there's a number of goalies that, you know, that as the goalie coach position is kind of, lack of a better word, maybe blossomed, as it's become a bigger deal in the NHL. You know, it used to be before my time in the NHL, people had goalie consultants and they'd come and work with the goalies every a week, every month or something like that. And now everybody has full-time guys, and a lot of teams have a second guy that goes out and scouts players and things like that. So there's such a specialized position for goalies that maybe they get in that role and they don't ever move out of that role. You know, for me, I enjoyed coaching goalies. I actually learned how to coach by coaching goalies. When I first got into coaching, guys, I was at the end of the kick save era. And if I did any kind of butterfly, it might be a half butterfly. But never was I a full butterfly goalie. Well, as I got into coaching, all the goalies I was expected to coach were butterfly goalies. And Phil Osier, who now works for our organization, actually was kind of the first goalie I coached, and I couldn't help him get better at all. I spent a full year, I couldn't help him get better. And he went out that summer and worked with Brian DeCord, who actually works for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Brian had made him way better. So I said to him, I said, what did he do? And I ended up going out and spending a week. Brian was nice enough to let me spend a week at one of his camps, and I watched him teach, and I just learned how to coach from coaching goalies. I learned how important habits were. I learned how important simple drills were to make guys better, and it ultimately really ignited my coaching career. But it was, at the time, there wasn't a stigma that if you were a goalie, you couldn't be a coach. I do think sometimes in pro, once you get labeled a goalie coach, that's what you are.
You know, it is interesting as well when you consider, like, if you look at the history of your team, the Detroit Red Wings, with Jeff Blashill, head coach of the Wings, Detroit was the first team to ever hire a goaltending coach specifically for that position, Dennis DeJordy in the 70s. Do you find it hard not to work more with your goalies now or with your goalie coach, or do you keep that at arm's length from what you're doing?
Yeah, it's evolved. When I coached goalies every coaching stop I was at Ferris, at Miami. When I went to be the head coach in Indy, I coached the goalies still. When I went to Western Michigan as the head coach, I coached the goalies still. I didn't, obviously, as an assistant at Detroit. But when I went to Grand Rapids originally, we didn't have a full-time goalie coach. So I shared it in the beginning with Chris Osgood. He'd come in a couple days, and then I would work with them those other days. And I did the same thing then when Chris decided to move into broadcasting. I did the same thing with Jeff Salako, who's currently our goalie coach. And we kind of worked together. And the thing that's really made it work over time with Jeff and I is we've got real similar beliefs. And honestly, I don't touch the goalies now. I don't work with them. I certainly understand the position. I work hand in hand with Jeff of the direction we're giving them. I want to talk with Jeff about what they need to get better at and how we're gonna teach that. But he's the guy that does it hands on every single day, and so it's evolved that way. I think the head coaching position in the National Hockey League is unlike any other head coaching position, and the demands on your time are so great that I think if you tried to coach the goalies, you wouldn't be as efficient as a goalie coach can be.
And Jeff, just a couple things too. Before I got rudely interrupted by my host.
You're used to it,
Jeff. You're used to that. You're used to that.
You went on from there, from Miami. You went and USHL won a cup, American League won a Calder Cup. Like, you've won virtually everywhere you've coached. So this has got to be hard. I know you're going through a tough year in Detroit. I know it's hard for you, but you have been a successful coach everywhere you've coached.
Yeah, you know, it's been an unbelievable ride, Berkey, and I've had opportunities to coach some great people. We've had a lot of success through that stretch. As you mentioned, those two opportunities to win there were great. And they had certainly things in common. The people that I coached, guys like Torrey Krug, Anthony Boteto in Indy, and just a great, great group in GR. And you know, we've had a hard times here. And this year has been as hard as anything I've been through professionally. Obviously, personal is a different side of life. But from a professional standpoint, it's been hard. There's no sugarcoating that at all. With that said, I can tell you, I thought our group did a really good job every day of continuing to try to grind and grind through the frustration, grind through the losses, continue to focus on hope and on having a better tomorrow. And it hasn't been easy, but I don't think life, and certainly hockey, is supposed to be easy all the time. And I can tell you, guys, what I've learned through this year, it gives you an op. If it doesn't crush you, you get opportunities to have unreal growth. And it hasn't crushed me, and I've got an opportunity to have unreal growth. And I'll be better served in the future because of what we've gone through this year. And I would say the same of our players.
That's a great perspective.
That's a great answer.
By the way, I think that's a great answer, and it's a great perspective. And it's not just a great hockey lesson, but it's a great life lesson as well. And talking about potential, I am curious about... Listen, earlier on this season, Berkey and I were working with Elliot doing Wednesday Night Hockey. We were doing a St. Louis Blues, I think it was Montreal Canadiens game, Berkey. And the minute we went off the air, St. Louis and Detroit do a deal. Jacob DeLaRose goes to St. Louis and Robbie Fabry goes the other way. And we're walking out of the building and we're pretty much all on the same page about this, that this is a great opportunity for Robbie Fabry to get his career going again. When you first got Fabry, Jeff, what was he? How did he need to work? What did you need to do with Robbie Fabry to bring that hockey player out?
Well, you know, I had opportunities to speak with Ken Hitchcock. I talked with Chief. I got to learn a little bit about Robbie before I got him. And I had heard Robbie's name. You know, our scouts really liked Robbie Fabry in his draft year. I know our scouts had thought highly of him going back a number of years. And so he was somebody whose name I'd heard over the years and was certainly intrigued. Jacob DeLaRose, a great person, is a very good at his role. But we had a lot of guys that kind of filled that role. And so we were excited to get somebody with Robbie's potential for offense in a top three line role. And I would say the number one thing that I kind of learned talking to different people was for Robbie Fabry to be successful, he had to play without fear. He had to play fearless. He had to play with that type of tenacity. He's not a big man, and he's not super fast. So to separate himself, to get into those hard areas, he had to play with that unreal tenacity. And he had been through so many injuries and so many issues. I was worried, and basically my message to him was, you can play cautious, and I understand why. I get it. Like, you've been through lots, and I understand why you'd be cautious. But if you're cautious, your best hope is to be an okay player in the NHL. But if you play without fear, you can reach your potential. And he's done a really good job of that. He had a little scare in a game against New Jersey, and he came right back the next game that he played. He had to sit a game out, but he came right back the next game he played, and I thought he played with great tenacity. Has he been perfect every night? No. Is he still continuing to grow his confidence and to learn how hard he has to play to be super successful in the NHL? Yes. He's a big-time fiery competitor, which I love, and I would give him big-time applause for fighting through the injuries and putting the fear aside and going out and playing with the idea of trying to become the very best he can become.
Berkey?
Yeah, it's really fun to watch how he's blossomed there. We all thought he'd got a new postal code, things would change for him, and it has really. So how is your cranky boss, Mr. Yzerman? How's he doing with all this? Kind of a grouch.
First off, I've really enjoyed getting to know Steve and working for him. I've had you think about this, Berkey, like the two guys I've worked for in the National Hockey League are Steve Yzerman and Ken Holland. I mean, I'm pretty blessed that way, you know. So, Steve, listen, I talk to him pretty much every day, maybe every other day as we've gone through this. The one thing about Steve, he won't speculate at all. So it's not, well, I think this is going to happen or I think that's going to happen. He's been a pretty good lesson for me this way to just let's see what happens. Let's take it day by day and let's see what happens. And let's make the best decision we can based on the information that's coming towards us. And when this first happened, we had no idea. You know, like I knew the game was going to get canceled, but hadn't been told officially that in Washington. You know, I felt that we needed to fly home, but at the time, you know, should we have flown to Tampa? We didn't know, and we were just trying to make decisions as we went through it, and Steve's been good that way. You know, he's steady on the rudder, and right now, though, Berkey, there's just not much to do, you know, so I think we're all just kind of sitting in a little bit of sit-and-wait mode.
Yeah, that's why we're having great success getting guests on our show.
yeah, exactly.
Everybody's around and everybody still wants to talk hockey. It's fantastic. I am curious, Jeff, how much do you pay attention? Like how much, because listen, we all know that head coaching in the NHL is 24/7 and you're all on your team all the time, but how much time would you spend checking in on what's happening in Grand Rapids? And specifically, what I want to lead to here is the progress of someone like Moritz Seider. It was a first-round pick last year, big German defenseman, huge upside, as you well know. How much would you check in on GR during the season?
Quite a bit. You know, both firsthand through over the years, I've gone to watch GR play on different nights off and things like that. I've had the opportunity. Todd Nelson was the head coach down there, and now Ben Simon. I've got very good relationships with both of those guys. So I talk to Ben on a fairly consistent basis, just keeping a pulse on what's going on down there, growing together, learning from the experiences that we both go through. You know, the 3 years that I was the assistant or the head coach in Grand Rapids under Babs, I talked to Babs almost every day. And honestly, the growth that you're able to gain from those shared experiences was awesome. So, you know, try to do something similar with Ben. And then also keeping track on, as you said, the prospects. And you know, some guys are more immediate and some guys are a little bit more long-term. And in Moritz Seider's case, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that Steve wanted to make sure he made every decision with the long-term interest of Moritz's play in mind and success in mind. And you know, I'm actually, the last couple of days, what I've done is went back and just started watching Grand Rapids games. And so I had a chance to watch their last game the other day and right before the break. And I thought Moritz played very, very well. You know, the thing he had to kind of learn, I'm a big fan, and I think he's going to be a really good player. How good, nobody knows until you get to the level, but I like him a lot. He's got swagger. He's got confidence. He's got a brain. He's a really smart player in a real big body that's hard. That's a lot of positives. I think when he first came over, he wanted to, you know, the knock on him in the draft year was how offensive he could be. And it's a lot of that, in my mind, is he's playing for the men's pro team. and he's kind of surviving. And I thought at the World Championships he was really good when I watched him firsthand, but he was playing a pretty safe game. And when he came over here, he just needed time to learn when to take a chance and when not to. And I thought the last game I watched him play, which was the last game before this pause, he did an excellent job of jumping in the play when he should jump in the play and getting back when he should get back. And to me, as he learns that, it's going to make him a really successful pro player.
Burke, you want to finish us up?
Yeah, I think my only question was whether Detroit took him a little too high, but I know Steve Yzerman felt that his whole time in Tampa, they were missing that big right shot defenseman. He was going to take him. He's really comfortable. He was going to play. And he thought that I'm taking him, and if it's a couple spots too high, too bad, because I think he's going to play, and we need the guy. So that's, like you say, Stevie's pretty committed guy, pretty decisive guy, and doesn't ever, you know, waver on decision-making. Like, he's a very authoritative guy. So I think he's going to be a good player. It was a good pick.
Yeah, I agree. I really do. And you know, and I understand that the notion of it being high, but – you know, at the end of the day, you always look back at these drafts, and if he ended up being as good as he potentially could be, people look back at the draft and say he wasn't picked high enough. So it just depends. He really liked them, and I'm glad we got him in our organization. The other thing I'd say is, you know, we certainly have a need here for a defenseman, and over time, I think between Ken Holland's staff and now Steve's picks this past year, we've replenished that pool of young defensemen. We have as many good young defensemen in our player pool as we have in a long time, and that's a real positive for the future of the Detroit Red Wings.
That's fantastic. Listen, you've taken a lot of your time out for us today. Last question for me. What does the rest of your schedule look like today? What's the rest of your day now, Jeff?
Well, I got to go. I got to do some math homework with my 12-year-old, which I used to be very good in math, but I'm not so sure on my skills anymore. So I might have to be brushing up on the internet. I'll make sure the kids get theirs done. We talked about maybe doing some kind of family workout or a yoga. There, as you guys probably, I don't know if you have snow on the ground, but we woke up to snow on the ground here.
Yep.
So my afternoon run might be out, but we might wrap it up. We had a family movie night last night. I made the kids watch The Natural, and two of the three kids liked it, so it was a positive.